What's up, class? This is Optimus Fields, and we're back for another episode. We're at block height 673,060, and the current price is 51,735. Nick, you want to introduce this one?
Yeah, so what's up, guys? Tonight, Optimus put the team on his back and made a presentation about Bitcoin's difficulty adjustment. He wrote Bitcoin Kindergarten, but me and Jessifer had nothing to do with this presentation. Optimus did it all. So shout out to Optimus for doing this. And I looked through it last night before I went to bed, and it looked really good. It has a lot of information in here, and yeah, I'm excited for it. So let's go.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. As Nick said, I'm here to do a presentation on the Bitcoin difficulty adjustment and what I believe and many other Bitcoiners believe to be the secret sauce and what makes all this magic happen. And I have this little subtitle called NGU Tech. So at the very end, we'll talk about what that means. So first of all, here's a little overview. First, I'm going to go into the 21 million hard cap of Bitcoin and deflation, and next going into some mining basics, and then touch on the difficulty adjustment and how all this makes number go up. So without further ado, like I said, 21 million. If you're new to Bitcoin, or even if you know Bitcoin, you know there will only ever be 21 million Bitcoins. Or like it says in the network, there will only ever be 2.1 quadrillion sats. And so Bitcoin is a hard cap deflationary monetary network, which means that there will never be any more Bitcoins created, this 21 million hard cap. And if you're unfamiliar with economics, then you might not know what deflation means. And in basic terms, it just means that your money has more purchasing power over time. And depending on which economist you ask, some economists will claim that a deflationary economy is bad because it would mean a complete collapse of demand for the money. And what they mean by that is that due to a period of rapid deflation, people would tend to hoard money instead of spend it, which, if you ask a Keynesian, is the death knell to all economies. But deflation in Bitcoin is not caused by a collapse in demand, but by a predictably constrained total supply. As I said at the top, it's a hard cap deflationary monetary network. And so it is yet to be seen whether a deflationary currency is actually a problem when it's not driven by rapid economic retraction or an advantage because of protection from inflation and debasement. As a Bitcoiner, and I know all my Bitcoin friends would say the same thing, we would say that deflation is an advantage. And so we like deflation. Deflation means that your money buys more things over time. Like, who doesn't like that? Everyone wants their purchasing power to increase over time, and no one likes their money to be worth less. And so to the inflationists out there, to those afraid of a deflationary economic spiral, we can just simply tell them people will always need to eat and they will always spend money. It's just how it goes. If people have money, they will need to eat and they'll need to buy things. And so don't believe a Keynesian economist. Hoarding is good. You need to save capital to build capital. You need money to invest and to build society. And so Bitcoiners, we have the meme HODL. We encourage HODLing. We encourage hoarding your Bitcoins so that when you really want to use those Bitcoins for an investment or for land or what have you or anything, they'll be worth an extreme amount of money, and you can use them to purchase your things versus needing to spend your money as quickly as possible so that it doesn't lose value. And so, like I said, we like deflation. In our current world, technology is deflationary, and goods are made cheaper as they become more efficient to produce, which is a good thing. And even if it was a bad thing, people still buy new tech every year, even if the improvements are minimal. Just go ask your friends that are willing to wait in line for the new iPhone or for the new video game consoles or for the new cars. And the improvements are sometimes minimal. Sometimes they just change one feature and they still go out and spend a lot of money. So even in a deflationary economy based on Bitcoin, people will still buy things. But the current... But the current economy, the inflation has taken hold, and the things we really want to buy, like housing and price of education and healthcare, childcare, food, assets, etc., those things have become more expensive because the dollar is being inflated away. So just to reiterate, inflation is bad. You do not want inflationary money. And here's a chart that that goes around on Bitcoin a lot. And it just shows you what I just said in a chart. So if you look at the price changes from 1997 to 2017, the things that you want, like a house and like college tuition and childcare, Medicare, food, etc., those have become extremely more expensive. At times they go up by, like it says in this chart on the right, 170% for college tuition fees. That's insane. But technology has become more affordable. Like, you know, buying a new car has become cheaper. Buying TVs has become extremely cheaper. And so as new tech comes out and it's able to be produced better and more efficiently, those products and those prices go down in price, while the, like I said earlier, the things you really want to own have been going up because the dollar is being inflated away. So technology is more affordable, but the things we need to survive are more expensive. So inflation is bad. If you look at the purchasing power of the US dollar from the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, the dollar has been decimated. And this chart that I have right here is only going up to 2013, so 100 years since the creation of the Federal Reserve. And the dollar is literally a nickel compared to what it could buy you in 1913. And this doesn't even account for what happened during 2020 and the COVID stimulus packages. So it's literally your dollar is buying you pennies on the dollar of what it could have in 1913. Again, inflation is bad. But enter Bitcoin and the 21 million like I brought up earlier, and a deflationary currency. And that's a good thing. But first, let's talk about a little mining. Mining, the word, is somewhat misleading. By evoking the extraction of precious metals, it focuses our attention on the reward for mining, the newly created Bitcoin in each block, and confuses the means for the end. So mining is the mechanism that is the basis for peer-to-peer digital cash, i.e. Bitcoin. And what that means is just that mining secures the Bitcoin system and enables the emergence of network-wide consensus without a central authority. So if you've been around Bitcoin for a moment, you'll hear the idea of Bitcoin being permissionless and there's no central authority and don't trust centralized third parties. Well, all that is occurring because of miners, because miners can validate new transactions and record them on the global ledger. Most commonly, it's called the blockchain, or as Satoshi called it, it's called a time chain via a proof of work competition, or POW. So proof of work is where the difficulty adjustment comes into play, and we'll talk about that in a few slides. But back to some mining basics. So miners receive rewards, the block subsidy and the transaction fees, in return for the security provided by the mining process. So to earn this reward, miners compete to solve a difficult mathematical problem based on a cryptographic hash algorithm or a cryptographic hash function. And the solution to this problem is called proof of work. And this acts as proof that the miner expended a significant amount of computing effort to earn the right to record transactions into the next block of the blockchain and is the basis for Bitcoin's security model. And so this process is called mining because the reward, the generation of new coin, is designed to simulate diminishing returns, just like mining for precious metals. Here you can see what the Bitcoin monetary inflation schedule looks like. So currently the Bitcoin block reward is 6.25 and we're in the fourth epoch. And as you can see from the chart, it first started with 50 Bitcoins and then it got cut in half to 25 and then to 12.5. And now we're at 6.25. And so this will occur all the way up until Bitcoin's final release of the block subsidy in 2140 or block 6,720,000. And here, back to a little bit of mining. So Bitcoin's money supply is created through mining, and the maximum amount of newly created Bitcoins that a miner can add to a block decreases by 50% approximately every 4 years or every 210,000 blocks. And like I said, Bitcoin started with 50 Bitcoin per block in January 2009, halved to 25 Bitcoins in every block November 2012, halved again to 12.5 in July 2016, and just recently halved to 6.25 Bitcoin in May 2020. And like I said, until this process eventually ends in 2140 or block 6,720,000 and the total 21 million Bitcoin are released. In actuality, it's 2,999,999,997,690,000 sats. So a big number. But how do we make sure there will only ever be 21 million Bitcoins? That is the question. And the answer is the difficulty adjustment. This gets a bit technical. But I tried to break this down as easy as possible for someone new to figure it out. And so as previously stated, miners expend computational energy and time to solve a proof of work hash or a SHA-256 hash function. And the procedure occurs by miners taking the previous block header hash, a reference hash to previous block in the chain, and producing a new SHA-256 hash for the next block by adding a random number value, which is known as a nonce, until a hash is lower than or equal to the difficulty target. In simple terms, miners brute force a specific 256-bit number into the correct number of zeros or at the start of its sequence, and then they add it to a block header hash of the previous block until it satisfies the difficulty target adjustment. So by varying the inputs in a SHA-256 hash function, even by a small amount, a different sequence will be spit out of the hash function. But SHA-256 works in a one-way function. So once a certain sequence is found, it's easily verifiable by knowing the secret. And that's basically the secret sauce of Bitcoin. So how does this ensure that no more than 21 million Bitcoins will ever be produced? Every 2016 blocks are approximately 2 weeks. The Bitcoin network recalibrates to make sure that the blocks aren't getting mined too fast or too slow, and the block interval of 10 minutes is kept intact. That's in theory. In practice, there is an off by one error, and the network recalibrates every 2015 blocks, and sometimes the blocks are coming in faster than 10 minutes and sometimes they're slower, but overall this still ensures that the amount of Bitcoin stays on its monetary schedule. This is like a metronome making sure that the internal time of Bitcoin is consistent. And as we stated earlier, we're currently in the fourth epoch with a reward of 6.25 Bitcoins per block. So it's been doing this for 12 years consistently. And this is the beauty of Bitcoin. This is the secret sauce. So as more miners come onto the network, the hash power climbs. But as the hash power climbs, every 2015 blocks, the Bitcoin network recalculates the difficulty target and makes it smaller and therefore more difficult to find this target hash. And vice versa, as miners leave the network, the difficulty target becomes larger and it becomes easier to find the target hash. Again, the correct nonce added to the newly created candidate block header hash. So once a new block header hash is found that satisfies the difficulty target, that block is propagated to other nodes on the network, and the game continues on for another roughly 10 minutes. And the miner is rewarded Bitcoin as incentive for his spent energy and time that was taken to mine that block. So why does this matter? Well, mining for Bitcoin will never exceed the monetary schedule. It will never fall out of time, and there will never be more than 21 million Bitcoins as allocated by the algorithm that Satoshi put in place. So this is algorithmically secured by the difficulty adjustment, which is truly revolutionary, and like I said, has a 12-year track record of working as promised. And in comparison to precious metals, if there's a monetary premium, more miners will seek to find more of said metals, and all they have to do is dig up more from the ground or ocean or wherever else they'll find the metals, and all that is being incentivized by the rising price. So finding metals doesn't have a difficulty adjustment. They can just go out and buy or dig for more metals, and the only difficulty adjustment that might be a plausibility is that there's only so much amount of metals in the Earth's core. And then again, to compare Bitcoin to fiat or paper money, the creation process is a lot easier. In colloquial terms, it's just printed. Money printer go burr, and there's no work or time to creating money. They just essentially push some buttons and create some debt out of thin air, and more money is put into the system, as we saw in 2020, and as they're doing this year in 2021 by seeking to print trillions of dollars. So they're flooding the system. And this just goes to show that Bitcoin is the hardest and soundest money ever. No other money on planet Earth can compete with Bitcoin because of this difficulty adjustment, because Bitcoin is kept on track and on schedule and has this internal time of producing a certain amount of blocks at a certain interval in block space. So this is number go up technology. All this culminates in a money that isn't easily created and can never be debased. Plus, as we said, increases in value over time. It's a hard cap monetary system backed by a decentralized supercomputer securing its monetary policy, its monetary schedule, a truly once in humanity invention. So Satoshi took the power to create money out of the hands of greedy humans and algorithmically domesticated our greed. It's like the fire of Prometheus. It's too tempting, or the Lord of the Ring. It's too tempting to use this power, and the lure is too hard, too much to create more money. And the incentive is so strong that humans have abused this power since the very creation of the first money. And so whether it was salt, beads, paper, rock, metal, etc., humans have always seeked to create more of it, but not anymore, because Satoshi fixed this. No longer can humans debase the currency. No longer can a greedy human go out and seek to create more money to enrich himself and his friends, because we're on a network that has literally been secured by an algorithm so that humans can't be greedy. We as humans are so flawed that we needed a computer to keep us in check, which to some people might be a scary thing, but this is a beautiful thing. This just shows what I said about number go up. Satoshi fixed human greed and is able to secure our money by an algorithm, and the price reflects that. Number goes up and to the right, because there can never be more Bitcoins than are created by the monetary schedule of Bitcoin. So all this computer, all this quote-unquote waste of energy, in my opinion, is securing our money, which is a good thing. And just to show you that the historical hash rate of Bitcoin continues to go up because other people believe like I do. There's more computers coming on the network. There's more hash rate coming on the network to secure this money. There's an incentive to secure this money, and people are willing to put their money where their mouth is and put their energy and time to securing the best and hardest money that man has ever known. And just as the hash rate keeps going up, the difficulty adjustment keeps working as promised, and it just gets harder and harder to mine Bitcoins, keeping us on schedule and keeping us on time to creating Bitcoins as Satoshi intended, so that when that last block comes in at 6,720,000, or in roughly 2140, we will get to the very last Satoshi and Bitcoin will have done what it promised. So it's truly a beautiful thing. And here I took some quotes from Twitter. First one's from Safedean, and he goes, "Making the difficulty of mining and its adjustment part of the consensus parameters of the network was the key to ensuring the supply stuck to its predetermined schedule. No matter how many people buy, use, or mine Bitcoin, nobody could make more than Satoshi's schedule. You may not like it, but you got to accept it. It's just, it's algorithmically secured." And over here on the right, I got Bitcoin Tina, and he goes, "The difficulty adjustment may be the biggest economic idea in Bitcoin. Simple and elegant, the difficulty adjustment enforces price inelasticity of supply, promotes price, and enforces security. It enforces a constant increase in stock to flow when paired with a finite supply. This idea is underappreciated." And I would agree with both of them. If you first get into the Bitcoin space, you may not even come down the rabbit hole of what the difficulty adjustment is. You may just think that blockchain is the real innovation. But I just realized that I missed a slide. As you get from Satoshi's white paper, as Satoshi said himself, "For our timestamp network, we implement the proof of work by incrementing a nonce in the block until a value is found that gives the block's hash the required zero bits. Once the CPU effort has been expended to make it satisfy the proof of work, the block cannot be changed without redoing the work. As later blocks are chained after it, the work to change the block would include redoing all the blocks after it." So, as I came across Durjiji's Bitcoin is Time, Satoshi created his own time, and we joke about it sometimes in Bitcoin kindergarten about how block time will take over Gregorian time. But that's essentially what Satoshi did. He created time so that we can timestamp transactions into a digital ledger. And so you take the hash of the previous block, you add a random value to it, you hit the difficulty of target, you receive Bitcoins, and the game keeps going, and the music keeps chugging along. So that is the difficulty adjustment in a quick, streamlined way. But if you want to go over the sources and read this stuff yourself, then I would definitely recommend reading Mastering Bitcoin by Andreas Antonopoulos, specifically chapter 10. And then, as I said, Bitcoin is Time by Durjiji. And then eventually read the Bitcoin white paper by Satoshi Nakamoto. And the sources of those charts are bitinfocharts.com and Bitcoin Twitter. So thanks for listening. I hope you learned something. I hope you got sent down the rabbit hole and you truly, truly start to wrap your head around the magnificent invention of what Satoshi created, and it's Bitcoin. So get out there, stack some sats, and enjoy your life. Thank you.
Holy smokes, big bong rip, dude. Man, that was incredible. Did you come up with the phrase domesticating Bitcoin or domesticating human greed?
Yeah, that's something that I put out a while ago, and I've always liked it. That's kind of how I look at it. You know, Bitcoin has domesticated human greed because you're better off to work with the incentives of the system than to try to cheat it. So yeah, I fully believe that Bitcoin has algorithmically domesticated greed.
Man, props. I will start using that. So That's my new favorite phrase tonight. Thank you.
Beautiful. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that was a good presentation. I liked at the beginning when you were talking about inflation and deflation and touched on people are always going to need to buy food and stuff. I mean, like, people are always going to need to buy stuff. Like, people are always going to consume no matter how fast their money appreciates. Like, and people are always going to want to live their life and go out and, you know, spend money on themselves or buy, you know, some more shirts or, you know, whatever they want. It's just going to cut out, like, this transition from fiat to Bitcoin, in my opinion, just going to cut out all the unnecessary spending. Like, you don't need that 30th shirt and you don't need to eat out six times a week. You know, you're going to say, well, maybe I should save some more money. And that'll, you know, like, the whole argument is like, oh, we need to spend because that's good for the economy. I can't think of something worse for the economy than a bunch of people who don't have any money. Like, people today don't have any savings. Like, I read a stat, it was like half the people in the United States or something can't even afford a $400 emergency expense. Like, I don't get how that's okay, but then you tell those people to go spend, and then they spend money that they don't even have and go into debt. So that whole argument is just total BS, and I like how you pointed that out.
Yeah.
So I think it's really funny because most Bitcoiners are probably in the same boat, not because of inflation or time preference, but because we're stacking so hard that, you know, we got no fiat left.
Fiat broke, Bitcoin rich. But yeah, I thought it was a good idea to talk about the 21 million and deflation for people, because most people come at it from that perspective of inflation is good, and they're, you know, as Citizen Bitcoin always says, we're default Keynesians, and so we're all afraid of this deflationary spiral, and oh my God, if our money keeps going up, no one's gonna buy things. And it's just, it's simple logic when you're like, look, you can't eat your money. You know, you will always need to buy things to just survive. And even furthermore, humans are going to human, and we like to buy things. If your money's going up, you want to buy things and enjoy life and enjoy the luxuries and the fruits of your labor. So while you know that your money will be worth something tomorrow, there's something to the instant gratification of buying something today and having it in hand and being like, yeah, look, I worked hard for this. I really don't even care about what it could buy me tomorrow, because I either, one, want to eat today, or, you know, like, I'm trying to look fly. Like, I'm trying to look like a baller. Like, I'm trying to go on this vacation with my loved ones, you know, or whatever, you know, reason people have to buy things. So I definitely thought it was important to bring that up. And then furthermore, because that's what the difficulty adjustment does, is it insures 21 million. And without the 21 million hard cap, then none of us would be here. This wouldn't be the experiment that it is today. So thanks for that, guys.
That was fantastic. One comment I'd like to make is difficulty adjustment is absolutely fascinating, especially as a miner myself. That's something I look very closely at. And I would almost tie it back to a concept in macroeconomics, like macro 101, which is that of the supply and demand curves. And it's as if Satoshi themselves created a new mechanism of markets. You might connect it to like the rudimentary Adam Smith's invisible hand of markets, which, like, he created a new mechanism by which it reframes incentives based upon supply and demand. It's absolutely fascinating. If you can explain that concept to, you know, someone who's not even intimately familiar with higher order economics, but it's a new, like, rebalancing supply demand mechanism. Absolutely fascinating.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I don't think I've read that, so I'll have to look into that.
Yeah, it's just me connecting some macro econ with difficulty adjustment. I don't think I've seen it anywhere. I think someone should write something about it, but someone smarter than me.
Well, maybe you'll just have to put the seeds out on Twitter, and then we'll get the ball rolling. All right. Well, guys, I think that'll do for this episode. So, stick around for Teacher's Lounge, and we'll be back in one moment.